and welcome to Blogosphere Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley, and I'm the founder of Blogosphere, which hopefully you've heard of. But if not, Blogosphere is a media company rooted in the world of influencers. We run events, an influencer network, and publish a nationally distributed print magazine, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, be sure to tweet us your suggestions. Our Twitter handle is @BlogosphereM. And if you want to learn more about influencers and the influencer industry, be sure to visit blogosphere magazine.com and invest in a subscription to our essential magazine. I'm delighted to announce that this series of Serious Influence is being exclusively sponsored by our very own tech platform, the Blogosphere Network. The Blogosphere Network is a platform where brands and influencers can feedback on what it was actually like to work with each other on campaigns. Real, qualitative data. If you'd like a demo of the service, please drop us an email at info@blogosphere.biz. That's info@blogosphere.biz. It's time to bring back the human touch to this human industry. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, I'm joined by Lucy Luke, formerly Lucy Skinner, who works in the creator division at Facebook. Lucy has worked with influencers and creators for nearly a decade across all forms of social media and is currently helping roll out Facebook's creator monetization tool.
My name's Lucy Luke and I work for Facebook and I'm a strategic partner manager for creators.
And how long have you been at Facebook for, and is that your first job within social media? What's your personal background?
So I've been at Facebook just over 4 years now. And prior to that, I worked for, I guess it's best described as a multi-channel network based in London. They're now called Brave Bison. And I was there for about 5 to 6 years, I think. It's a long time ago now.
So you were right at the beginning of the monetization of social media. And then was that when you were first introduced to influencers at that time?
Yeah, it was during that time. So when I first started, the kind of people we worked with were large organisations like BBC and Sky and record labels. And then it just felt like it kind of crept in some ways that we started to work with influencers. And it was around the time that YouTube were funding content. And that's when they actually suggested that we start to look at individuals that were kind of bubbling up on their platform and getting these sort of great audiences.
Did you know before getting your job at what is now known as Brave Bison that that is what you wanted to do for your career? Like, what did you study at university? Did you do journalism at university or...?
Sort of. So going way back, first degree was history. Just wanted to keep it very, very broad because I knew I wanted to be a journalist. And then my first ever job as a journalist was as a staff writer for Metal Pages. And it wasn't metal music. It was actually metals like gold, etc. And why that was interesting is it was an online publication. So I was quite used to writing for an online publication, thinking about how to engage with those that were kind of commenting on our content, etc.
What year was this that you were writing for Metal?
So 2001.
Okay.
And it was a very, very strange job in the sense it was minor metals. But yeah, it was around the time of September the 11th, sadly. So suddenly, you know, with the metal exchange going down with the Twin Towers, we had a real resurgence in news and people were searching online to read our news articles. So that was very interesting. And then I went on to go and study at Cardiff in broadcast journalism and went straight into local newsrooms. So Bridge FM and BBC Bristol, etc., to read the news and to report. So
you were sort of in the industry that then, when you went to Base 79, isn't
yes,
it, that
it was
that disrupted that, because its influencers disrupted traditional media. Did you find the transition smooth from traditional to new? And in 2001, obviously writing for the online magazine was before the advent even of Facebook. Mm-hmm. So how did social media develop in that time as a resource for journalism?
Absolutely. So I was doing local radio for about 8 years or so. And at the time, I remember I was at LBC and we decided to set up a Facebook page for LBC. And a lot of the work that I was producing was being shared on the LBC Facebook page. But on the other side, I had my showreel that had been cut into a like CD and I was going around and sending that out, you know, to try and get work. And so I was realizing that actually I was in a very traditional format of broadcast, and I really wanted to try and get into the digital side. Plus, frankly, they were paying more. So it was easy in some sense when I moved over into that world to be able to help Base 79 at the time work with more traditional people like the BBC, where I'd worked before, but also help them think about editing video and growing an audience for a digital audience. So it wasn't that hard a transition.
So your role at that time at Brave Bison was around sort of education and community building, not the actual sales part of it?
No, not at the time. I started off by doing two things. Number one, helping more traditional rights holders get their IP managed and under control, and then, you know, crucially monetizing it. And then number two was thinking about how to use YouTube as a marketing tool to grow an audience around their content and ultimately drive people back to their own websites.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, you know, how I started.
And that was, I mean, Base 79 was sort of selling pre-roll advertising across YouTube, and then YouTube pointed you guys in the direction of influencers on that platform as maybe a tool to do brand partnerships with.
Sort of. So before that, we were thinking about individuals, but it was more famous people. So it was kind of music artists, presenters. We were like, you know, it's really good if they had a YouTube channel because they could market themselves and the content. But then YouTube started funding content, and they'd obviously started working with these individuals and seen them bubbling up and suggested, you know, as a way of growing an audience to the content we were producing, how about we look at some individuals on YouTube and cast them as presenters or to be a part of the content that we were producing for YouTube. So an example would be one of the channels that we've been asked to commission was in collaboration with Guinness World Records. A very, very easy format. People loved watching the TV show of seeing people break records on TV. So we thought we'd bring it to YouTube. And when we were casting presenters, we were looking at more of your traditional well-known presenters. I can't actually remember a few, but just think about that kind of traditional BBC presenter. And then YouTube suggested that we look at a few creators that were bubbling up. And we ended up casting little known Marcus Butler and Alfie Days to be the co-presenter for a year-long production, filming for a year.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant. They were absolutely fantastic as presenters. And what we benefited from was obviously the vast amounts of people that were following them on YouTube came to our Guinness World Records channel and enjoyed watching them and fellow friends / creators break world records on YouTube.
And they were must have been growing hugely at that time as well. Are we in sort of 2014?
Even earlier? Earlier, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, 2012.
Amazing.
Yeah, because I came to Facebook at 2014. So it was a year or two before then. And at the time, we did have our eye on brands, but branded content wasn't a big thing.
Yeah.
It was still around the pre-roll and AdSense revenue.
Which took a pummeling in recent years and isn't really the same viable business as it once was.
No, sorry about that, YouTube. But no, for me, and in terms of my career, it brought me back to thinking about producing video that was going to build an audience and the fans were going to come back and engage with. And it was the first time I really saw that. It was very, very easy to produce a video with these guys presenting and then just seeing the fans come in and want to engage with them and find out how they're feeling. How hard was it to break that world record? Why don't you try and break a different one? It was just really interesting to see.
What are the categories that make a video, something that worked on TV, work on YouTube? And do you think you've seen quite a few people make the mistake of trying to translate and kind of challenges and with the Guinness World Book of Records that works well on YouTube, but did you see other people try to do different formats that just didn't work? And how are you advising people at that time?
Yeah, so there's been a couple of people that we've worked with where they've thought that, you know, it's just easy to upload highlights from an episode of something that's been on TV. And I think where they sort of fall flat is that they don't engage with that piece of content as either the talent, the presenter, or, you know, even if it's someone like a BBC that could come in and give that expert commentary afterwards. So we see that a lot where people just don't remember to actually engage with that piece of content.
And then when you moved over to Facebook in 2014, what was it about Facebook that drew you away? And that's when brand partnerships had already started. So
yeah. So when I came to Facebook, what really interested me was the fact that video as a product had only just really been built in 2014 for Facebook. So they were very, very behind in some ways. So I saw that as a really great challenge to bring over the work that I've been doing on YouTube with Brave Bison, at the time Base79, and bringing that expertise and learnings over to Facebook and seeing how that product has evolved. So that's what really drew me to the position. And also, there weren't many of us at all covering Europe for media partnerships. And media partnerships at Facebook, we are the team that look after anyone that's well known that produces content for Facebook and Instagram that doesn't touch the sales side. So it's all the organic stuff. And there was about three of us on the team when we first started. So it was very small and we had a lot to do.
What were some of the first things that you did when you were at Facebook concentrating on video?
Before that, in the early days, it was getting people to set up a Facebook page. Many people had Facebook profiles and it was their ways of communicating with friends and family, uploading photos. Some people on YouTube, the YouTube creators, were using it to market their YouTube content, which is just obviously not really of interest to us going forward as a platform. So it was really early stages of educating individuals, people publishers, as we call them. So that's like a famous celebrity or an athlete or a creator, to actually just go ahead and set up a Facebook page and understand what that could do for them. So that was back in the day. And then it was taking the next step of, hey, we have a Facebook video product now that's relatively easy to use. So how about you produce video for Facebook?
Because some of the views that influencers getting on Facebook video far surpassed what they were being able to gather on YouTube, but it was harder for them maybe to monetize. Would you say that was fair? It was like Facebookers could have millions of followers but weren't earning as much as the YouTubers. And also with Facebook pages, what's sort of the deal with them now? Because it feels like lots of people are setting up Facebook groups now and not concentrating as much on the actual page, just from what I hear.
Yeah, that's true. We have been pushing Facebook groups. But going back to the monetization thing first, that was a key blocker for me when I first started there 4 years ago, particularly with those that were obviously making vast amounts of revenue on YouTube. So that not having a monetization tool was a blocker. And also trying to explain to people that we did have some form of monetization, which was in branded content deals. But my team don't deal with branded content deals. I don't go out and co-sell with an organization to a brand. So it was quite tricky.
I think sometimes journalism and sales just don't go hand in hand. It's like
I was like, how about you just create this wonderful thing that will give back to the community, etc. But just going back to what Facebook pages are now. So we have a new video template. That sounds so boring. But if you are a video first creator, we've now created a page that you can set up which really has video front and center. So you can have your showreel at the top, you can organize it into playlists. So that's really nice if you're video first.
And then, and this is when you set up a page now and you can opt into that video page.
Yeah. Right? And if you don't like it, you can go back to the traditional format. But a lot of creators now are leaning into the video template because they're not really posting photos or links or anything like that. And then groups, we have seen a rise in creators using groups because it is a great way to foster a community around either yourself as an individual, so it can be your fan base, or more personally, I think, is around a topic or theme or discussion item. So for me as a journalist back in the day, if I'd had a product like groups, I would have loved to have used that for news gathering purposes, you know, around my local area, local community, or a theme of a story that I'm following up on. And we are certainly trying to encourage creators to think about groups as a great way to sort of foster a community and have a purpose around what they're producing.
And also it's your most engaged followers that are the ones that are going to be supporting you when it comes to like buying your products or your merchandise or stuff like that. Absolutely. I just want to go back a bit. So you're doing the education around your new video tool. Then you move into the news department at Facebook. So what happens and why do you move over to news?
So I was in entertainment when I first started. As I said, there were three of us. And my job at the time was to cover all facets of entertainment. So whether you were an author, whether you were the Pope, the royal family, Marcus Butler, like it was very, very broad. And I thought, do you know what? I've done this for a year or two. I think going into news right now and going back to my root of working as a journalist and really bringing journalists onto the platform, I thought would be a really, really good new challenge for me rather than just covering a broad spectrum of entertainment partners. So yeah, that was my first job of really working with individuals, and that was journalists.
What was the type of news that you wanted to be on Facebook that you were championing? Is it political or?
Just not false news.
No, not fake news.
Not fake news. We call it false news internally. But yeah.
You did have your advertising campaign, Fake News Is Not Our Friend. I think I remember seeing that around.
That was
that felt quite an American campaign in the UK.
So when I was a journalist, I had my little CD in my showreel. You know, I never thought about having a Facebook page to show off my work. So I think the first goal I had was to get journalists up and running as individuals, and then also ensuring that they could use the platform to do safe news gathering and know that it's legitimate and that what they're reporting is true and that they know how to sign off the IP to use it in their stories. It's very product heavy, but can be very, very effective when you're gathering news. So
I remember interviewing Guido Fawkes once, and he was saying that the first fighting ground in politics is Twitter, but the actual lobbying and where you're going to see the most results are doing it on Facebook.
Excellent.
You did say that. So you're in news, and then you come back over to creators. So you said at the beginning what your job is, but what does your role, just to clarify, what's your day-to-day now?
So my day-to-day now, so I came back into entertainment because we now have grown the team massively in Europe. And
so under entertainment, it's all celebrity, influence?
Celebrities, creators, which is where I focus now, and music, plus digital first publishers, so a Lad Bible, and broadcasters, so your Endemol, Fremantles, BBCs. And this role came up that was just focusing on creators. And I decided to go for it because we finally have a really, really good, robust monetization product. And what interested me was coming back to work with these YouTubers again, and it doesn't have to just be YouTubers, creators on Facebook, and helping them build a business and grow an audience, which no one's had the time or resource to do.
So that you're calling them creators and not influencers. Do you have a...
I do have a reason why. Yeah. Again, it's internal jargon at Facebook, but influencers on my team are people like an author or a poet or a business leader. And creators are people that create content for a digital platform like YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. Sorry, it's so boring, but
it's definitely interesting because I think the word influencer now has had such a bad time in the press that maybe a new term would actually be helpful.
Yeah, so that's what we call it in Facebook. And I'm an SPM, so Strategic Partner Manager. But essentially what I'm doing is helping creators understand and use our products and also helping them build their business, as I said earlier.
So can you explain a bit more about this robust monetization tool? How does it work?
So number one, we have ad breaks, which I'm sure you've probably heard of. But since September last year, we now have it available for 41 countries, which is huge.
And this is on your video-focused Facebook page?
No, it's on any video. Okay, this is...
So on your profile as well, you know, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so any video that's 3 minutes long or longer that meets our monetization eligibility standards, so is deemed brand safe. And also, if you come into the program because you're eligible, you can have a mid-roll inserted after 1 minute.
So do you have to be accepted at the moment? And is that an automated or is there some manual?
No, actually, it's very easy to check if you're eligible for it. There's just a link which I could try and remember. Search Facebook ad breaks and it'll come up. But you can basically click on this link and then it'll show you if your page is... It can only be a page, not a profile.
Okay.
If your page is eligible. And if it's not, then it'll give you some indications on how you're falling flat. So you have to have 10,000 followers on your page, and it'll just give you a really nice indication as to where you need to grow in order to join it.
Does Facebook have the same problem with people buying followers? It seems all to be about Instagram and fake followers, but do you have mechanisms?
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have very robust policies, and our algorithm will flag if there's anything that's, we call it manufactured sharing, or anything that feels like there's a transaction, a monetary transaction that's taken place, then our system will flag it. If you're already monetizing, then you could be demonetized.
Yeah.
And you'll get warned about it so that you can kind of appeal, etc. Or it will just be a case of low distribution because, you know, we can see that it's not legitimate or authentic. Yeah. Yeah.
And then in terms of how that's monetized and the value of it, is it indexed against just how many people are seeing that content?
In terms of how you get the most revenue?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's also around intent. So I forgot to say that if your video is seen on our watch tab, or if someone comes to your page to watch the video, you could be served a pre-roll. And that level of intent is what we're rewarding, because we don't want to just be throwing ads out in our newsfeed left, right and centre. It can upset the users.
Sorry, explain that once more. It's because you've got Facebook Watch, which is a separate entity.
It is, yes.
And then you've got your Facebook page. If you're directing someone, you get pre-roll on it, or if there are just lots of views, then you can get pre-roll.
Yeah.
And you get a margin of that as well.
You do.
How do the margins differentiate between pre-roll and then the inserted ad after the minute?
They don't. So it's still the rev share split of 45, 55, 55 back to the individual. But my point is that if someone is coming to the Lucy Skinner Facebook page to watch my cooking videos, that's a clear intent.
Self-promo there, Lucy.
I do not cook, by the way, just to be clear. But say I did, then that level of intent means that a pre-roll would be shown. And then mid-rolls are in feed. Wherever the video is shown, you can have a mid-roll shown.
It's a lot going on.
I know. Can you imagine what my job is like? I mean, to explain all these products. But what I do like about ad breaks now is it is very, very easy to sign up. It's easy to get paid now. That, you know, when we're testing, we run into all sorts of issues around tax forms in different countries and language barriers, etc. But it seems to be working really well. And crucially, we have data now to show you as an individual or you as an organization how you're performing and where you could be doing better. So we have one metric which we're calling money left on the table, but we now have a way of showing you that you haven't put this ad in this video, which could have made you X amount of money. So, hey, put an ad in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, which is really cool.
As a creator, is going down this monetization rule on Facebook as competitive as it is creating YouTube content? Would you be able to gain the same amount of money? Do you have kind of stats on that to lure them over? Is that the part of the education?
So interview me in 6 months and I might have some more market knowledge for you. This is one of the things that I need to start straight away in my new job, is work out what's going on in the market in general. At the moment, I'm just focusing on creators that I know have a huge fan base on Facebook and maybe haven't leaned into it recently. So working out why and showing them that there now is a monetization product, get them using, etc. But what I don't know is how that's going to compare and match up to their YouTube revenue. And
I think there definitely was a shift that people had huge pages on Facebook, but then just couldn't make the same amount of money. So then we're trying to build elsewhere and move on to Instagram, which is really Facebook owned as well. So it's nice for them to be able to come back and have those views if it is going to be competitive.
Absolutely. And I think it is an education. Well, I know it's definitely an education piece, because a lot of people I speak to go, I'm kind of intrigued by Facebook because I know I have a fan base there, but I have no idea why they're coming to Facebook to watch me, because they've traditionally watched me on YouTube. It's yet another platform to think about, but I'm intrigued that now I could be making money off pre-roll and mid-rolls. So yeah, literally in 6 months' time, I might be able to come back to you with some learnings from how it's shaping up with other platforms.
In terms of the users on Facebook, you've got 2.7 billion monthly active users. I was speaking to someone recently and all the news talked about how many older people were joining, and that was the fastest sector. But there's actually been a resurgence in the very young coming to Facebook, and it's the millennials that seem to have gone off onto Instagram. But then there's the TikTok users who are also back on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything to say about that? That's good.
It is good. I mean, I think at the moment it's very, very mixed.
In terms of the kind of creators that you're working with, they've already got big profiles, but what age demographic are those creators in?
It's really hit and miss.
Yeah.
Also down to countries that they're discovering them as well. So this is one of the joys. We have a new tool called Creator Studio, which is in the back end of your Facebook page, which shows you this amazing data that we didn't used to show easily. It's all in Page Insights, but now it's done in nice colors and you can see who your demo are, where they're engaging and stuff. And it's really mixed. And the message that I give to my creators that I've just started re-engaging with is, I think you'll be quite surprised about how it does not match up with your YouTube audience, because a lot of them worry about duplication. And, you know, I've produced this great video for YouTube, but I don't want to put it on Facebook because it's not exclusive. And we're like, you'll be really surprised about how different your audience are. And some of them are younger, some of them are older. It's a real mix.
As a brand setting up a Facebook page, is it in your interest to be helping those pages as much now? So say, like, I have a Blogosphere page. What are the new sort of tools for that? Or is it very much just on the creator side that the changes are happening?
Yeah. So unfortunately, in my team, I just work with partners, not brands, but we do have a sales team that look after brands. And, you know, a lot of the tools do cross over. I don't think we have ad breaks for brands. I don't think we do. No, we wouldn't do. But there are lots of these tools that you guys could use as well.
You've talked about the different markets and languages. Because I see that on Instagram, the second biggest user is Brazil. I think that's what I saw on the Statista. I do like checking in on that. But with the communication, because obviously Instagram is Facebook owned and they have their new creator tools as well. How much communication do you have with the Instagram creator team?
Really close in the UK. Okay. And actually, I think in other regions as well. But for me right now, they've just expanded their team. And they now have someone focusing just on creators. And in the UK market, there's a lot of crossover. So we are doubling up on events we're doing and trainings. And what I say to my creators and what the Instagram say to their creators is, if it makes sense and you're producing a longer form video for IGTV, if it makes sense for you, there's no harm in you cross-posting it to your Facebook page, because guaranteed the audience will be pretty different.
Yeah. It's just in the edit, because it's not vertical videos on.
Well, vertical video is still fine for Facebook, you know. Or another classic thing, because a lot of creators think creatively first rather than business. They seem to sort of resonate better with the creative aspects. And, you know, a lot of them are doing Instagram stories and didn't realize that it's just a, you know, little click in settings to cross post that to Facebook stories. And Facebook Stories is really, really growing at
the moment. To Facebook Stories on your page, not on your profile.
Yeah, on your page. Yes, yeah. You know our products well. But so tactics like that, we're working really closely together in terms of educating creators on our products and how they can cross over quite nicely for minimal effort.
All right, I feel like we've got the creator page down. So can you tell me a bit about Facebook Watch? And then I would like to talk about the Facebook Brand Partnership Tool.
Brand Collab Manager, BCM.
Brand Collab Manager. So let's go to Facebook Watch. What is Facebook Watch? When did it come to the UK? And what's special about Facebook Watch that influence should be on there as well?
Okay, so the first thing to know is that Facebook Watch isn't something that you apply for or you're eligible for. If you're producing video that's within our safety guidelines, community guidelines, then it could appear in Facebook Watch. And Facebook Watch is simply another tab that is Facebook first. And if you're listening to this and looking at your Facebook page, just look for the blue play button, click on that, and it will take you through to another tab, which is just all Facebook video. And the way it works is I will be served videos that are based on my interests and my habits on the platform to date. So obviously I work with a lot of different people. I like news content. I like cooking. I've mentioned it already. Family stuff. And so in theory, the algorithm will be serving me longer form videos in general based on my interests. And it's our video first tab.
And those videos you don't need to subscribe to watch. It's advertising model there.
Absolutely not. It's just literally a tab of video that you can move around and engage with.
Do you have a Facebook subscription model? Is Facebook Watch a competitor? What's the competition there? Is that very dissimilar from Netflix? I read an article that was like Facebook Watch and its competition is maybe even competing with Instagram TV.
No. I mean, certainly there are similarities in the sense that we're wanting people to have more of that lean back. experience where they're going to be served videos time and time and they just want to stick around and watch. The crucial thing is that within Facebook Watch, we want it to be social, and that's what sets it apart from a Netflix. You know, we want creators to be using tools like Watch Party and polls and other bits and pieces that we have to make sure that when we're watching the videos that we're going to come in and engage with that creator directly. In answer to your question about subscriptions,
we
are testing something called fan subs. As one of my creators has been using it for a while, called Lab Baby. If you haven't heard of them before, they're
that sausage roll guy.
Sausage roll.
Isn't it Lad Baby? Didn't he do the number one hit?
He did. Yeah. He did. Yeah. He did.
So Mark and sausage rolls.
So Mark and Roz, fab couple, and they've been producing content for a while around being parents. It's quite, you know, sharp comedy stuff, but also just general day in the life of. And they've got an amazing fan base. Yeah. They've got a community that follow them. And so it felt right for them to test fan subs for us. And they didn't really expect much, to be honest. They just did a bit of product testing for us. And the way it works is that you, as a fan, would subscribe, you'd spend a certain amount per month, and then you'd be allowed to see exclusive content from those guys. And it's become there a really good revenue stream for them. Mm. But also the fans love having exclusive access to them.
I feel like for a creator, it's also quite a clean way of making money and not necessarily then having to do potentially brand partnerships that pay very well but aren't in line. It's just relying on that sort of, I don't know, 1% of your audience that are willing to pay.
And also creatively, it works for them. You know, it's not that much of a lift to get set up. You just have to do a little introductory videos so that people feel they've got something special when they arrive into the experience. And then they're producing this content anyway, so it's just holding stuff back for these fans that really want to engage with them on a more personal level and pay for it.
Would you ever introduce a tool that is just donating on the one-off, like if you enjoyed a video, give X to support that creator?
Ooh, I'll have to feed that back to the product team. Yeah.
What would you say are your biggest challenges day to day in this new role?
Number one is creators who want to re-engage with Facebook because they know they have an audience there, but have platform and product fatigue. Platform fatigue in the sense they're incredibly busy, they're doing their brand deals, their other projects, they've got their content to push out to YouTube, Instagram, whoever. And thinking about re-engaging with Facebook, like how could that work in their day-to-day? And also then we have so many great new tools and products now, really kind of using that time to pick and choose one or two for them to play around with rather than just overwhelming them with 10 different types of product they could use. Those are the two challenges. But the good news is that now they can't really push back and go, well, I can't make money on Facebook now. So that's made that conversation. I just haven't heard that this since I've started. Whereas back in the day, it was like...
Do you have case studies of someone that is using the new monetization tools about like how much money someone could make on the top end? Obviously not naming any names who the creators are, but...
This is top of my to-do list.
Yeah.
So Jay Shetty, I don't know if you've heard of him. He's amazing. You should all look him up. He's doing wonderful things on Facebook. He is from the UK, born and bred in Tottenham, but he's now out in LA. So what I need is more creators to work with to make lighthouses and showcase studies. And they definitely are leaning in. And I've got some great examples, but I would like to have some more just to go out to market with.
Yeah, I definitely think having those actual hard, cold statistics does help.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about in your new role, about what we're going to see in the industry?
I think for me, it's the emerging pipeline of creators. You know, I've got a core book of business that I work with. They're wonderful. They test products for me. They're very happy. And so next half, I want to be looking at those that are bubbling up. And we had an amazing program last summer called London Lab, where we spent in 2 6-week chunks. We had Facebook first creators come in and spend 6 weeks with us, training and, you know, learning how to use the studio. And it was just very in-depth. And we've seen a few wins from that, where there was one guy, Ali A Official, who has been approached by a big broadcaster from one of the videos that he uploaded that he produced with us to potentially be commissioned for a series.
Wow.
So these little nuggets of feedback are great. And I'd like to do more of that with some up and coming Facebook creators. So watch this space.
BCM?
Oh yeah, Brand Collab Manager. So this is a great tool that we're testing in the UK and Germany, where essentially creators can set up their own profile in the tool based on branded content they've done in the past, or so they might want to showcase previous branded content, or they can literally like a few Facebook pages of brands they would like to work with.
Is there campaigns that they've done before? Does that have to be solely on Facebook, or is that platform agnostic?
Platform agnostic. You basically create your profile to showcase you and your audience and the kind of stuff you do. And then brands can come in and search for creators that fit an RFP or a campaign they want to do. And then when they discover each other, you basically transact within the tool with each other, like Facebook don't get involved in any way. So launched in the US.
So payment can go through that manager?
No. So we don't have a payments tool in there at the moment. So you'd have to do that. If you're a creator listening to this, you'd have to do that direct with the brand or get your managers to do it, etc.
So it's search at the moment.
Literally
search, matching.
Yeah, and email exchange. And we've got a ton of creators that we've whitelisted and they've come in and set up their profiles, and we're going to be going out to agencies as well to get them on board and using it. But we've had a lot of interest in the market. So as I said, it's very much test phase. So.
Yeah. Well, everybody has been talking about it for a while, that this thing is coming over from the US. It's exciting to see how much Facebook is still very much excited by creators and what that says about the industry. You've also got Amazon making a play in the creator space as well. Do you think that this is a sort of winner takes all, who's going to really own it? Do you think that's still up for grabs, or do you think that it can be split?
I think it can be split. I think it's very different distribution surfaces. And as I said earlier, like, I'm trying to make it very efficient for the creators that I work with as well. So, you know, you've really leaned into IGTV. That's fantastic. I mean, we do own Instagram, but that's fantastic. You know, how can we look at ways?
Have people really leaned into IGTV, do you think?
Some
I know that
have.
Now it's coming on to, it's only in the last few weeks that it seems to be available on people's feeds. And then
yes,
the engagement on that has suddenly gone up. So IGTV is...
Yeah, Instagram in general and IGTV are very, very easy conversations to have at the moment. You know, a lot of creators that I meet get it, are happy to produce content for it. So actually to utilize that and say, well, hey, how about you cross-post some of this content onto Facebook? You know, it's just making it very efficient for them to understand our products and use them.
Is Snapchat a concern to you anymore?
Not for me personally, no. But
Do you think Evan should have sold to Zuckerberg in 2012 when he had the chance?
I'm not answering that question. But maybe yes, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think one of the products that we'll be hearing a lot more of in our region is WhatsApp. A lot of my creators don't realize that you can have stories within WhatsApp. So already that's creeping into my narrative of I'm pushing Facebook stories because it's really cool and there's lots of amazing things you can do in Facebook stories. But hey, you can also do it on WhatsApp. And a lot of people are like, had no idea.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
And we're seeing kind of different regions utilizing it in different ways.
In terms of how to use WhatsApp as a creator successfully, can you follow on WhatsApp in the same way that you can across other social? I mean, I use WhatsApp for personal, like friends, family stuff.
Yeah. So I've mentioned WhatsApp stories and I don't know actually how to use it myself.
Okay.
So, but just, I just know it's there. I will come back to you on
that
one.
Yeah, that's interesting. So. I know that WhatsApp can be used as a very good newsletter, and then, you know, open rates on a WhatsApp is very different to an open on a...
Yeah. And you see it in certain regions as well. Like, I don't know, when I was doing the Kenyan elections, we were talking about it earlier, you know, most of the journalists were communicating with their groups of community on WhatsApp. It was a very interesting time.
In terms of brand sentiment towards Facebook, mainstream press doesn't really like influencers in general. I feel like Facebook's been pummeled a bit, and particularly like Mark Zuckerberg, who was the golden child 10 years ago, and now everybody seems to be not being so positive. Is that a big mission of Facebook, to mention kind of false news earlier, but to turn that around? And what are the processes in place to show the good stuff that you guys do?
Yeah, so how it touches, I mean, it's always touched my team, but the word integrity is deep within our goals, internal goals, external goals, our mission. You know, there was a change to our newsfeed January last year where we made family and friends first, meaningful social interactions. Integrity, you hear it day in and day out in my line of work. And, you know, yes, with creators, I have some clear revenue goals because that's what the creators themselves have been asking for. But integrity is a big thing as well. So how can we help individuals feel safe on the platform, protect their IP, give them the right tools to moderate comments, hate speech, etc.? So it affects our day to day.
I suppose it's also in terms of data. For creators, that's great. You want access to as much data as possible, but it's that transparency around data that everybody just got blanketed and got a bit frightened of data.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And some people have said, I'm taking myself off Facebook because I don't trust, you know.
Just going to log into Instagram.
I'm just going to log into Instagram. Exactly. But actually now we're being asked for more and more data, yeah, of which I would never be able to access or share. So there's two sides. There's data for a business to show performance, which is why we've got Creator Studio now, to make it easier to see how you're performing and who your audience are. But yeah, we've always been limited in what we can share. Yeah.
What is your personal favourite social platform?
I knew you were going to ask me that. My personal favourite. So at the moment, I do spend a lot of time on Instagram. But yes, of course, Instagram and Facebook, WhatsApp I use a lot.
Do you think because there's just so much going on within Facebook, and you were saying earlier that, you know, creators have got a limited amount of time, so you're going to pick two products and then explain them. Well, are events going to be key for you in terms of education? Like, what are the ways that you can educate people at scale?
Yeah, so there's three things. So the beginning of this year, we did Facebook Creator Day in Soho Farmhouse. And it was amazing. We had creators trapped in Oxford from all over Europe for a day and a half. And that was where we spent time really going deep on our products. And I do think there's a follow-up to this where we're going to get small groups of people into the office to get really practical as well. I think what resonates with creators, as I said earlier, is the idea of being creative. How can we get them to just do cool things on their stories or amazing filters that are bespoke to them? But actually, when it comes down to ad breaks and branded content, it's a bit harder to digest in a half a day's workshop. So I think it's going to be much more handholding in the office and showing them how to do it. We've got two big studios in London, so I think we're going to utilise that a lot more and get people in to actually film alongside a creative consultant to show them how to film for Facebook and how easy it can be.
There's the like secret sauce that you guys have, your USP. So you want to educate, but then there are things that you want to keep away from other people. Do you think that there's much communication between the big social platforms?
That's a really good question. I never think about that in my day to day, unless it's kind of, which we're not, by the way, but say I was funding loads of content, then obviously the secret's about how much money I would spend on X, but we're not at that stage at Facebook at the moment. So I've got nothing really to hide from the other platforms right now. Who knows? Maybe next half I'll have billions to spend.
Like, oh, that tool's great. Let's take that tool, they might be saying.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll come up with something really unique. But no, I mean, at the moment, the stuff that we're being asked for is, as I said, when I started in 2014, we were behind YouTube. We didn't really have a good, robust video product. So we are catching up in that sense.
I think it's exciting that you've got a platform as big as Facebook that are really getting behind creators now, and that's a whole new stream. If it's untapped at the moment, then you're going to be pushing it. So it does make sense. Because, you know, people are getting a bit fatigued, I think, on Instagram now, because there are just so many brand deals on Instagram that the engagement isn't as big as it once was, especially within creator space.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know a huge amount of people that do branded content deals on Facebook that I work with right now. And so they do ask me, you know, what's the secret to success? And I just always say to them, just think of brand deals that will be really authentic or fall in line with your content you're doing already. It sounds obvious, but when you're saying about tactics and workshops and training, another thing that I'm going to do is think about niche topics. Well, not niche, but like getting a cohort of food creators into a room to do training just around food content and branded content, etc. And same with beauty and fashion. And that's another tactic that we might do next half.
What do you think we're going to see in the influencer industry as a whole? Do you think that we're going to see some more consolidation on maybe the smaller intermediary platforms, and that it's going to be brought into house in the bigger social platforms and also in agencies direct?
For branded content?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think you'll see it more in-house, particularly with tools like Brand Collab Manager, if that works out. And it's going to be really interesting to see how third parties like an MCN or an agency tackle that from a business perspective. Certainly from in my line of work right now, I love the idea of having an MCN or an agency that could scale. You talked about scale earlier, but could scale all this education piece for me, help me onboard these creators, help them perform well. But those third parties need to figure out what they need to be able to make that a viable business model for them. So I think that's going to be interesting to see which way that goes.
Because Facebook really does have, with your insights and data, the power. That's what the brands at the end of the day want to see. They mm-hmm. want to have that quantitative data, and the API can just get cut off.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Don't be scared. It's a long way off.
So we talked a bit earlier about Lad Baby and that quality of brand collaboration. What other brand campaigns have you seen with creators on the platform that you think are successful and why?
Yeah, so the key thing with Facebook at the moment is that content that's going to do well on our platform in terms of distribution is content that's really authentic and real and will get your fans or your family or your friends engaging naturally and more meaningfully with your content. So when you think about a piece of branded content, if you're doing something that's just clearly just taking a check and going home, it's not going to resonate as well with your fans, and then therefore probably wouldn't perform that well. So one of the pieces of content I actually filmed for YouTube, so I haven't done this on Facebook, it was for Pitch Perfect 2, and it was with NBC Universal. And we flew creators out to the set in Baton Rouge, which is an amazing place near New Orleans. And originally the studio was like, you know, we'll get them access to all the big talent and they can do Q&As, etc. And I was like, it's kind of been done, really. Mm-hmm. So we picked creators who, one was a makeup artist, one was a dancer, and we made sure that they filmed content for their channel behind the scenes with the makeup artists, with the dance choreographers. So they got loads of how-to content, would truly engage with it. Their fans loved it. And then off the back of that, they then had their Q&A with the celebs and went to the red carpet stuff. But the content that really worked well was the kind of stuff that their fans could really relate to.
Really specific to the audience.
Yeah, and it sounds so simple. But I think we get approached a lot also by brands or film studios or record labels that want us to tap into our creators to help boost something that they're working on. And I just always say to them, just try and get people who it's not going to be unnatural for them to be sat in an environment that's not their normal environment just to take a big paycheck home. So
with the Facebook pages and videos that are going up, do you have search functionality, so if someone is saying how to do your makeup or how to do that specific dance, that they would then get tracked over to that creator's page? YouTube works a bit like
search engine. You could search keywords, but no, I don't think it's as good as,
because that would get some,
yeah,
that works for them, that it, in terms of being a bit more evergreen. And in terms of how many times you should upload video onto your Facebook page, mm-hmm. what gets rewarded there? Is it we saw the daily vlogging and that boomed from 2015 onwards, and that's where all the eyeballs on yep. YouTube are going?
Yeah.
How do you get eyeballs?
How do you get eyeballs? So you need to be thinking about engagement. That's your one metric that you should measure. And so in terms of how much to upload, there was one creator that was just starting out and he decided to do a daily video upload, but for some people that's just not sustainable. So I would say if you're doing video, go for a 3-minute video once a week, but just be sure to use our other tools to engage in and around that content. So whether it's a status update to say, hey guys, in 2 days this video is going up and guess what, I'm going to go live tomorrow, and then maybe go live for a bit from your mobile phone, cross post some content from Instagram, and then Thursday is your video, and just try and keep momentum going and just see what your audience likes. And if they do decide to engage with it, please respond.
Yeah.
Because that'll just, you know, they just know you're there.
Do you think live video is still going to be a big player?
Very much so. We see most engagement on live videos on Facebook. I think it's like 3 times more engagement. So people get intimidated by going live. I can see that. But a lot of people have realized how easy it is to do from your mobile and have got comfortable with the idea. It doesn't have to be highly produced. It was Kay Burley she decided to test it. And she quite often goes live in the back of a cab on the way to Parliament to talk about Brexit. But it was just the vision of her in the back seat of the cab eating an apple going, hey, the story's breaking, I'm on my way and this is what I'm going to do. And fans love it because they can ask her about the story and ask, suggest questions to ask, etc.
One 3-minute video a week, going live when you can, not getting intimidated by it. It's quite intimidating going live, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. So you don't have to go live, but also some of my folks that have been on YouTube traditionally, they're going through their evergreen content and scheduling content that's been on YouTube back in the day and putting onto Facebook in and around a new original piece that they're doing just to kind of supplement and keep activity going.
Because we're also seeing quite a few creators that are not posting as consistently but are working on series now, and that premium content. You've got a 3-minute video, but can you put a 20-minute documentary?
Absolutely. And I would love to see that if you've got a 20-minute documentary. But yeah, the point is longer form, episodic content. This is absolutely the direction that Facebook's going in. But think about how it can be social and how you can interact in and around it. So yes, there are some creators or influencers who have maybe kind of grown up on YouTube and are now thinking about goals off digital altogether. So a TV series or getting something licensed for a big broadcaster. So Facebook's a great place for them to sort of test this episodic content, as long as they can show that there's engagement in and around it. And broadcasters are interested in it.
Mm.
They're searching for this stuff as well.
A big thanks to Lucy for coming on the show.
You've been listening to Blogosphere Serious Influence with me, Alice Audley. Be sure to check out blogospheremagazine.com for influencer industry updates. And why not treat yourself to a magazine subscription whilst you're there?